Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. We're talking about his book, A Government of Wolves, and the emerging police state, not only in the United States, but around the world, and the participation of all the people, the psychology of compliance behind it, and now, of course, the technology that is going with it. And this has, of course, been a long agenda in the works and in the plan, and as John has pointed out several times, this is what's been incorporated into a lot of the work that we can read from the past. Philip K. Dick, George Orwell. This is not news, although it might be to certain people. But I wanted to ask you more about the media's role in this as well, the participation in some cases in the non-analysis of these kinds of situations, in the non-questioning, and in the basically, some news outlets these days are basically like they just read the press releases from the government, and then that's it. They're of course a different attitude online and everything. But the mainstream media, what can you say about that, John? And do you have any faith in the fact that they might be helpful at all in helping to turn this around?
Not so far. I mean, mainstream news programs, the bigger ones, cover very little of this. I mean, when the National Security Agency scandal broke with Snowden, they got a lot of coverage for a while. Not now. SWAT team raids, those are pretty egregious. People getting killed, they're crashing down doors. The word SWAT means strategical weapons and tactics. But again, the word SWAT used against a person, you SWAT flies, you don't SWAT people. And I'd do away with that term if I were them, but they like it, obviously, the police. But the news media covers very little of those. I mean, you have to look. People like me, we cover it. We find out about it. There are some good internet, sites like ours at Rutherford.org, my book, Government of Wolves, a few other writers out there. But largely, the mainstream media doesn't cover it. But I'll go back. In other countries where we've seen this happen, Nazi Germany, Soviet Union, the press cooperated 100% with the government, generally. Didn't report much of it at all. Especially if you had a popular leader, like a Hitler, others, okay? So, I don't get dismayed. I don't expect them to cover it, but people ask me where you can get the news. Like, on the internet, you can get news. A good program like yours, covering this issue, good. But there's not a huge source of information out there on these issues, no. So the media is basically very complicit in it.
Yeah, people have to source for themselves and find reliable information, because it's not something that's going to be spoon-fed to you. The apparatus is on the contrary, it's there to kind of keep you isolated and prevented from kind of touching base with reality to a certain extent. But I wanted to ask you about John Carpenter. You had a good article up, saw it over on Lou Rockwell a couple of weeks ago or a month ago or so, about some of the analysis of his films. And I've always been very, he has a lot of good stuff in his movies, and he always seems to have this kind of component of focusing on the police state. I think a lot of people will know about They Live, one of the great movies he did. But what do you make about someone like John Carpenter? And it's good that there's people who are in that environment who kind of continuously bring attention to these kinds of issues. And although he's talking about, in some cases, about supernatural issues and whatnot, it's still very much speaking to our age and our time, right?
Yeah, John Carpenter, like you say, They Live is a very good film. It basically, in my opinion, stated his idea that we were just basically being fooled, by the powers that be. And I agree with that. Again, he focuses on the media. The media, he is arguing, was conducting subliminal attacks on people. That may be true. Again, you can't really document something like that. He was a visionary, Bo. But if you go back to probably the genesis of a lot of the thought, again, is George Orwell, but also Aldous Huxley. He saw the coming of the electronic media, and basically his theory was that we would be smiling at Big Brother. We wouldn't be resisting Big Brother, because we would be entertained to death. And there's a good book by a fellow named Neil Postman. I tell you, he was a professor, I think, at New York University, called Amusing Ourselves to Death. he argued that back in the 80s, that we were moving to a society where we would be watching continually, being entertained, and we wouldn't be alert. So I think that's basically where we're at. And They Live, John Carpenter. In fact, I got an email from John Carpenter. He read some of my stuff and thanked me for it. Said,
oh, great. Cool.
Keep up the good work, he said. I felt that was an honor. I really appreciated that. But, you know, if you look at They Live, Escape from New York, his movie, 1981, Escape from New York, he predicts a fascist future.
Yep.
And now I'm seeing some books coming out now arguing that we're living in a fascist government in America. In fact, Lou Rockwell has a new book out on that, by the way.
That's right.
But that was argued by Carpenter back in 1981. There's a good book by a fellow named Bertram Gross, by the way, G-R-O-S-S. He was a former presidential advisor to Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman. He wrote a book called Friendly Fascism, I think back in 1980, where he was arguing early on that America was moving in a bad way. And what we mean by fascism is a co-joining of large business corporate interests in the government, which happened in Nazi Germany, by the way. I don't know if people realize this, but early on, corporate leaders met with Adolf Hitler, and there was a press conference. One of the corporate fellows walked out. This is a footnote, by the way. This actually happened. He walked out to the press, and they said, "How'd your meeting go?" His response was, "We hired Hitler," and he walked off. This is a large corporate entity. So that's what we call fascism. I think it's coming about in America. Because we don't have the limited government that the so-called founding fathers in this country wanted. In this country, the idea was that the basic governments would be towns and counties. The federal government would be the sort of government that would raise money to protect us against external enemies. But again, that's all kind of evaporated. But the great visionaries, again, I go back to Philip K. Dick. People should read Philip K. Dick. They should read Ray Bradbury, by the way. Fahrenheit 451.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Read that book. It's amazing. He predicted earbuds. That book came out, I think, in 1950. Earbuds, cell phones, large screen TVs. So a lot of these people were visionaries that people are reading going, this is just science fiction. But, it, you know, if you've ever seen the movie Blade Runner, you know, Blade Runner by Philip K. Dick, the movie is it's about, you know, corporate interests running the world and creating all these kind of really strange entities. So that's where we're at. You know, drones. There's actually an android now, and your readers and your listeners should be familiar with this. It's called the Atlas. Their DARPA is creating this. It's a 6-foot man. He weighs about 330 pounds. He's an android robot. In my opinion, and it's not just my opinion, that's the policeman of the future.
Right, a kind of an iRobot scenario?
You will not be able to argue with that at your front door. No. Now, I actually had one fellow said, "I'll throw acid on it." I said, "Dude, acid won't stop that from coming in your house." So, again, and this is what I've argued with the whole drone thing. I wrote the first drone law in the world, by the way, last year, and it was passed in this town. Restricting drones from what I wrote was drones can't have anti-personnel weapons, and then anything they collect can't be used against you in a criminal court of law. That was actually passed by our city council. I was interviewed from people all over the world on it. It was the first one passed in the United States. Seattle now in this country's followed suit, restricting the use. But President Obama signed a law in effect allowing drones to fly out of the country without any constitutional civil liberties protections whatsoever. Just willy-nilly. So all these science fiction films, though, predicted this. The movie Elysium with Matt Damon, go see that movie. That's a pretty accurate view of the future. You have robotic creatures walking around, drones flying through the air. So there are still people doing that these days. They're talking about this. The Harry Potter book, good essays on the coming police state. The Hunger Games book, children's literature. I think some of the, and that's a good sign, some of the younger kids are picking up on this.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing it. But they're reading, they're not getting it at school. They're getting it out of the Hunger Games, the Harry Potter book, and books like that.
Hmm. Yep. Yeah. It's very interesting. I wanted to back up a little bit to something you talked about before, which is a very, very important and good point in terms of the friendly fascism, because this is something that has been in the works for a long time. I think that I mean, many, many years ago now, they realized the that you can't have a strong-armed kind of fascist dictatorial system, because it will end up like, you know, what happened in Soviet Russia. The only reason they would want to enforce that is to, I guess, more or less eradicate a lot of people, and to that horrible extent it might have been successful. But the fact is that if you're going to have a long-term system running, a government and everything else, you can't be that overt with your violence against the people. And therefore I think that the ideas you know, proclaimed in some of Huxley's work, that you need to we need to create a scenario where the people love their servitude, you kind of have this emergence that you said of the third way. I know that in the, you know, late 90s, Bill Clinton and Tony Blair was very well into this kind of idea as well. It is a corporate fascism that is, you know, on the rise, but it's like a dictatorialship with a velvet glove. It's a soft tyranny in a sense. It's much more difficult to detect it. Certainly it's there. And as you said, if things go bad enough, you have the rise of the military police right there to you know, crack down on you pretty quick. But ultimately it seems like their dream to be able to preserve the empire that they're building currently would be to have this kind of soft tyranny where people really don't know that they're in a dictatorial system, right?
Well, there's the old adage that if you put a frog in water, boil it slowly, the frog never jumps out, it boils to death. If in this country, if the media is not telling you about it on a daily basis, you don't know it. And most people watch TV for their information in this country, and the TV programs do not do a lot of analysis. Anybody that's seen American TV knows that. But the real first warning that I saw coming, really, from a government official was President Eisenhower's farewell address, which raised a lot of eyebrows at the time. But he warned against what he called the military-industrial complex in America. That was the co-fusion of the large corporate interests promoting warfare and the government. He said it would do two things. It would destroy the economy, and the American's economy is awful. And two, it would destroy freedom. He is absolutely correct. And he was a five-star general. He saw it coming. And that's basically what we have. So you're absolutely right. It's it moves slow. You call it friendly fascism. That's Bertram Gross's adage. But it comes with a smile. As I had some people tell me once, as long as Americans can go to the mall and shop, you got them. So any materialistic society is going to suffer from that. You know, if you go back to our Declaration of Independence, and people should read that very carefully, what Jefferson says there is, he says there is a creator who gives a certain absolute right, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What he was arguing was, freedom is a spiritual thing. It existed before us, it will exist after us. And you have to realize it's a large concept. It's something you have to grab, pull to your bosom, and protect. He said that. And his phrase was eternal vigilance, Frank. I mean, Jefferson. Eternal vigilance keeps freedom. You have to be alert all the time. If you're the frog in the water, you're not alert. You're watching some guy on television dance, whatever they're doing on TV, his lips moving. I don't know, American television has a lot of talking heads arguing continuously over inane subjects these days. People that I don't even understand they're talking about, celebrity figures, their pimples or whatever they might be wrong with them. That becomes a current phobia, and people listen to it. So, in my opinion, most Americans are like that frog in the water. It's slowly boiling. They're smiling. They're going to the mall to buy their underwear or whatever they're getting, and they're happy. But, again, go back, and I tell people, study Nazi Germany. It was very similar there. No one saw it coming. No one saw it coming. Everybody knew the concentration camps existed. They didn't fight it. They thought, well, that's where they send the bad people. And this is the thing. I was amazing. I talk about it in my book. Auschwitz and the concentration camp were essentially private prisons. They were there to make rubber products and other products for Europe. The average person in the camp was expected to last about 30 days. They worked them to death. They fed them minimally, and they died, and they threw them in the ground. And they made bear aspirin, all those. Coca-Cola had a plant in Nazi Germany during all that. A lot of American companies did. They were very complicit in all that was going on. A lot of people thought the government was, and they were smiling at the government saying, this is great. We have a great economy now. Hitler's getting rid of the Jews, the gays, the asocials, they called them, the homeless people. Everything's okay. I can go to the mall now. Shop.
Let me ask you if we, again, go back a little bit further here. You've written about this in the past as well. You've written on home education, you know, rights and reason. You've written on state versus parents, you know, the threats basically to when it comes to raising your children. Because one of the ways here that has been very instrumental for the state has been to take control of the children at an early stage. And a lot of the connectivity, if you will, between the parents and the kids are lost. And an example I usually want to bring up here for people as well is that homeschooling, for example, in Sweden have been banned since 2010. And you've had a number of families that have pretty much fled the country to be able to, you know, teach their kids what they want to teach. So what's your, you know, take on this, John? And how do you think that, do you think that one way out of the situation could be to, if parents once again take responsibility of educating, you know, their own children, as opposed to, you know, handing them over pretty much to the state? What do you think?
1979, I got a call from a father. It was about 2 days after the incident happened. He said, I was arrested late, 2 days ago, late at night, and taken away by the police. And I said, what'd you do? He said, I'm home educating my children. I have five kids in my home. I went up to Michigan, defended him, and won the case before the judge. His right, home educate. That was basically the beginning of the home education movement in the United States. Since then, it's grown. I think home education is a good idea if it's done correctly, and a lot of parents do a very good job of it. They teach the kids to read the classics. They actually learn to read. I don't know if most people realize this, but America, the last time I looked, rated 11th in the world in 18 industrialized nations on literacy. So our public schools do a very poor job of teaching kids to even read. So, is home education a good idea? Yes. Private education is a good idea. But I think the concept that we have to think about is that if a child is under state care, let's say 50 hours a week, 40 to 50 hours a week in a public school, how much time do they really spend with their parents?
Yeah.
So the primary parent becomes the school, the state. So I think that's why home education, private education, it delimits the power, but it's a difficult thing. Like I say, we finally won the right to do it here, and in some places it works very, very well. I mean, I've actually had law students who have studied with me have been at home educated. They're brilliant. They read Mark Twain books. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Twain. Obviously, you are. Mark Twain's you can't read Mark Twain in most public schools. They ban a lot of books.
Why is that?
He uses the N-word once or twice, isn't it?
Hmm. And that's okay. Well, it was a different time when he was writing. And again, there's a mistake to use them.
He was writing historically, but history's the truth. That's right. We're not talking about the truth. I had a young man who came to me not too long ago, good student, graduated from a top university. He said, I feel cheated. And I said, why? He said, I went to a public school, but I never read Mark Twain. He went down the list. He said, they're all banned in my school. I couldn't read them. And I said, you're a sad man then for not having read Mark Twain. He was one of the best writers on the planet. So that's the way it is. So I think home education is a very good idea. If they banned it in Sweden, they should not have. No.
Yeah.
That's a very police state method of dealing with something. I believe in individual freedom. If you can do a good job teaching your kid at home, and I do believe you can, it's been proven, then why not let people do it? If you can have a good home, a good private school, and there are good private schools of 20 and 30 kids sitting around, reading good books, learning the math, doing art. Art, by the way, in America, in a lot of schools, there's not hardly an art education anymore. I mean, they don't teach them art anymore.
At least not classical art. It's all modern art these days.
Yeah, but again, I paint myself. I didn't learn it in a public school. I was told not to draw in class.
Right. Yeah.
I learned it on my own.
Why is that? It's all the creative things, the things that actually, again, kind of opens you up and frees you. This is the capabilities that might lead you later on in life to become a great inventor, one who thinks outside of the box. Again, all of this goes back to like that, the farming of mankind kind of ideas. You want to keep them in the playpen, uniformitarian to the ideas. All should be the same. They should know the same. They should learn at the same rate. It's an eradication of diversity, despite that they, you know, mention the opposites, right?
And here's another thing too that a number of people have pointed out to me, and probably school teachers, and I see it in the students. Civic education in America is terrible. Kids graduate from high school in this country, and I forget, was it 16 or 17 when you graduate from high school? They can't even tell you what's in our Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is 462 words in America. 462 words. It takes you 5 minutes to read them. I spoke to a law group not too long ago in this town, some of the best lawyers around. In the middle of my speech, I was talking on some of the cases I handled. I asked, I just stopped, I wanted to see. I said, can any lawyer in this room give me the five freedoms in the First Amendment? You're talking about free speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the media, the right to protest. Not one lawyer in that room could give me the five freedoms.
Hmm.
That's public education in America. What does that say? Well, people wonder why police are stopping people on the streets in some of the large cities and frisking them and even doing rectal exams while 20 people watch without objecting.
Yeah.
They don't know their rights.
Yeah.
They're very compliant. But that comes out of how people are taught. If people were taught about Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, and people like that, they'd be a little more assertive of their rights. Those are radical people. But radical, you know, again, the word radical means you're just standing up for your freedoms. You're doing it nonviolently. Again, I'm a proponent of nonviolent activity, like Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's another thing. I recently talked to some prominent African-American students at one university, and I asked them, I said, surely you've read Letters from a Birmingham Jail by Martin Luther King. They looked at me blankly. They were African-American studies for 4 years. They had never read many of Martin Luther King's writings. I know why. He was quite rebellious.
They
hadn't even read Martin Luther King. That's shocking.
Yeah. Tell us what you think where America is going politically, if you're zooming forward a little bit in time, looking into the crystal ball. Of course, it's always difficult to make predictions, but with things as they are today, and if this is allowed to progress forward, where is America going to be in like 10, 20 years from now?
That depends on the people, but just give me an example. When Mitt Romney was running against President Obama this last time, I had a group of students studying with me, and I said, I'd like to find out who's funding these, you know, what corporations. About a month later, they came back, and they had a list of the corporations that were funding both President and Romney. Believe it or not, almost the exact corporations were funding the same two people.
Yeah, that's right.
So they win no matter what. That's the corporate state America lives in. Unless we dilemma that, and I don't see how we can do that. I really don't. There's no major uprising in America about most of this stuff. There is a faction of people that like read my book, A Government of Wolves. They want to get in there and change things. But politically speaking, I think drones sometime after 2020 are going to be so awesome, it's going to be difficult to deal with that. I mean, what, from 20 miles up, a drone can pick up a quarter off the ground, a picture of it. Facial recognition software, they can hack into Wi-Fi, they will have scanning devices to see through the walls of your home. Police in this country, by the way, already have roving vans that have scanning devices. In other words, they can stop in front of your home and see you walking around what you're doing in your own home.
Yeah, thermal imaging or something like that, some new device fits.
It's more advanced. It's like going through a TSA scanner in this country. They can see the outline of your body.
Huh.
They can see it clearly. If, for instance, you're cleaning your shotgun, whatever, in this country, you could get a SWAT team raid. To give you a case that we're actually working on, the police actually went to a judge and got a warrant to search an apartment. They were going to go knock on the door of this guy who supposedly had drugs. They did a background search on this fellow, found out his father had a legally owned shotgun. The next day, they did a SWAT team raid, broke down the door, threw them both on the ground because he had a legally owned gun. That case is in the court. Argument is, obviously, they violated his rights by doing that. But again, if they have the ability to fly over your home with a hummingbird drone or a seagull drone or all the drones they have, and again, I've written on this, I mean, there's a switchblade drone that flies through the air, stops at your head, and explodes. And I often say, what kind of mind develops something like that? What are they thinking they're going to use that for?
Yeah.
So I would say by 2030, if there's not a radical change, not a great civil liberties uprising, again, nonviolent, we're going to be living in what I would call an electronic concentration camp. We're already in that, in my opinion, because, I'll maybe take out those three words, in my opinion. I'm told by experts in the field, the people who work in Secret Service, that everything you do is not a file. Facebook posts, text messages. Even school authorities, by the way, in the state schools here, are reading kids' Facebook posts and suspending them for saying contrary things. We've been in some of those cases. They're snooping on kids. So we live in a spy state already. Add drones to that. And again, the drones are going to go worldwide, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a whole new paradigm, whole new scenario, and we don't understand it. The technology is moving very rapidly.
Yeah, definitely. The developments out of DARPA, together with Boston Dynamics, who's one of the companies that they're working with DARPA as well, but they're the ones behind, Atlas, the robots that you mentioned, Android, and there's tons of other developments as well going on. The budget, the funds into these areas is just monumental. It's astronomical as well. And that's another thing that the American people and in the extension then later on the people of the world as well, they're also the ones who are funding this. They're paying for, the prison walls going up around them, right?
It's a $30 billion a year industry, drone, starting in 2015 in this country alone.
Wow.
There's a lot of money to be made. And again, when they sell one to the police departments have already started using them. The Border Patrol agents use them. They turn inward, by the way, and they're doing surveillance. Americans pay for that, yeah. And again, people have trouble finding jobs in this country. I mean, some of the major law firms are downsizing. I talk to people who are good students in law schools. They can't get a job. They're shoe salesmen. And Americans are paying for these devices from some corporate entity that's making tons of money. Again, I'm not anti-drone. I think drones can be used for really good purposes. Putting out wildfires, searching for children, sure. But if you have the police mentality we have now in America using a drone, they can be very dangerous. Like I said, if a group of people, if you remember the Occupy protests of 2011, those were put down brutally by the police in New York and Oakland with billy clubs and pepper spray. Just think those same protests and you have an army of drones swarming over them with lasers, tasers, sound cameras.
Mm, yeah.
It will extinguish freedom of speech and protest.
Yeah, it's like another analogy I usually make is to the movie THX 1138, where all the people around, in that underground society are building, all they're working on is building these robotic police officers that are there to kind of, to patrol and take care of them.
When I saw the Atlas android, that's the first movie I thought about.
Yeah, I know.
People should watch that film. I think it's an accurate view of the future.
Yeah.
They're debating now in the federal government, in the legislature, they have these, what they call V2V boxes, which actually will be, maybe every car will have to have in America, where they can actually track every movement your car is making, know exactly where you're going, and they can shut your car off from a distance.
That's right, yep.
So you can't run. And that's the thing. People say, well, I'm going to flee. You can't flee. You can't get away now. You can go to Bolivia, but if that drone can pick up your Wi-Fi signal, you're not going to be free there. If they want to come after you, they'll come after you. So the question is, what do you do? what did Martin Luther King did? He knew they were tracking him. They called him. You know, the FBI actually sent Martin Luther King a letter saying he should commit suicide, or they were going to reveal the secrets of his personal life. But he kept going. And again, the old adage is, do you stand and fight the issue or do you run? Well, if you can run, maybe that's a good idea. But in this culture and what we're facing, the new paradigm, my opinion is running is going to be a fruitless endeavor.
Well, eventually we'll catch up with you as well, because as you said, this system is going in global. It's a global grid, and eventually there won't be any place to go. And there hardly is at this point.
No, I don't think there's any place you can go. No. I think a lot of rich people are moving out of the country to hide their taxes, but I think it's Costa Rica and one other country now is giving over all financial information to the federal government of the people who live there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, in this country, if you do anything electronic, like electronic banking, the government already knows it's in your bank account. So they already know all that. So, but now people have actually moved out of the country to hide it. I think most of the countries are going to give it over to the government. So people who are trying to do that, I think that's going to be another fruitless endeavor.
Right. Right. Yeah. Now, if much of this, as you've detailed already, John, is unlawful, I wanted to ask you more about why it's allowed to continue. If these are violations of the amendments, the Bill of Rights, etc., it seems that it's yet, despite all these things, just kind of carrying on. And the question is, how can this be done? I mean, as you said, law then in that regard is it's up for interpretation. It's about whether you do press charges. I mean, you've handled a lot of these cases and a lot of the people that you've represented. But it seems to be dependent also on the judges that you deal with. In some cases, they just completely run you over, it seems. And in other cases, they actually respond to the legal framework that's there. But it seems to me that it doesn't matter that there is a law or that there is amendments or a Bill of Rights. It's being violated, correct?
Yeah, to give you a good example, we had a case for a 45-year-old African-American on a snowy day in January 2011, sitting in front of the Supreme Court, far to the left. He was blocking the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court. There's a plaza there. He had a sign around his neck. He wrote with a marker. It said, police in America brutalize African-Americans and Hispanics. Lo and behold, there's a 6-year-old congressional law saying you cannot be out on the Supreme Court plaza in America communicating a message. He was arrested and taken to jail. We filed a lawsuit saying that violated his right to free speech under our First Amendment. A judge ruled that that law, the congressional law, was repugnant to the Constitution and it violated his constitutional rights. 2 days later, the Supreme Court passed its own law, which was even stronger, prohibiting such conduct. Now, we've got a bunch of activists that we've refiled the case again, but the Supreme Court actually passed its own law denying this guy the right to free speech. That's the court you have to appeal to. They passed their own law. There's no hope in a situation like that. And like I said, the Supreme Court's actually condoned SWAT team raids, where police can just smash down people's doors without any real evidence they're doing anything illegal.
Yeah.
Courts are very complicit. It's very difficult to win in the court. The other thing that's operating here is that we have a secret government. If Snowden hadn't outed the NSA, we wouldn't have known much about that. But the crazy thing is, my research, I wrote on the NSA in the 1980s. I detailed some of the original stuff they were doing. The famous Church Report of 1970, Senator Church wrote a law trying to restrict the NSA in the 70s. They've been doing this for years. But again, the media doesn't cover this unless it's sensationalized with Edward Snowden. It's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, James Bamford has written about this for a long, long time, you know, and it's...
Very good. Yeah. James Bamford's books are excellent. Yeah, he's written on this a long time. But most people... They're like Huxley said, they'll be smiling at Big Brother. And again, Nazi Germany is a good example. People were smiling at Hitler, and some of those people that were smiling wound up in the concentration camp. So what I tell people is you can't protect your own hide. Your main job should be protecting other people. And that's why you get out there and get active.
What have you heard about the the alleged FEMA camps has been debate raving for many, many years now, whether they're there or not, whether this is in the works and the plans. What do you make of something like that?
I think people have sent me pictures of the supposed camps. They may be in operation. That may be true, but as I write in my book, America's setting up private prisons right now. They're run by corporations where they give the government, the state government's money here. And this is unbelievable, if the state governments will keep a 90% occupancy rate in the prison. In other words, the state governments are passing all kinds of laws, like I talked about in the first segment of the interview, against raising chickens, praying in your home, having vegetables in your yard, those kind of things. The marijuana phobia in this country is crazy. People are going to jail for an ounce of pot.
Yeah.
But see, that keeps the occupancy rate up. And then the corporations, I mean, the average meal in a prison here costs a corporation 60 cents. And the prisoners have to eat it. But they charge the taxpayer much more than that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I go back. Auschwitz, Dachau, all those things, they were essentially private prisons. They were making products for Europe. So history's like a large wheel, I tell people. It keeps coming back around. And the question always when the wheel comes back around is, have you learned your lesson? No. We don't seem to learn the lesson. You know, Philip K. Dick, by the way, believed that he said we were repeating the Roman Empire over and over. And, you know, America is an empire-building nation. I mean, it's an empire. America invades other countries.
Yeah.
It kills innocent people with drones.
What do you make of America's foreign policy and all of the wars that's being fought overseas and everything else? And, again, just the idea that you mentioned before, that there is an interest there of having a national defense, but that's obviously not the question at this stage. It's already within the realm of pre-crime, pretty much, again, out of something of Philip K. Dick's work, because it's preemptive strikes now, and it's all these things, and it's been going on since... before 9/11 too, of course, but it's even ramped up since that time. What's the answer in that question? Should America just pull out as quickly as possible and that's it, or how do you see that?
That's not the issue. They're not going to pull out. There's too much money to be made. I mean, give me an example. I had a young Air Force officer who went to the Air Force Academy here in America. Very good student, top of his class, flew warplanes. He visited me not too long ago, and he said, I'm totally disillusioned with the wars over in Afghanistan. That was the country he was in. I said, why? He said, one day, and he was gung-ho in the beginning. He said, I thought America should get over there and fight for freedom. And he said, I drove by an opium field, a large opium field. It was surrounded by American troops. They were guarding the opium field as it was being harvested. He said, that moment, I decided what we were doing is wrong. So, we know about Karzai and the sacks of money and all this, the cash. I mean, if you do your research, I mean, when the Iraq war was going on, there were sacks of actual cash just going into Iraq, American taxpayer money, and disappearing.
Yeah.
So it something's going on there that obviously isn't correct. So there's too much money to be made. So that's, it's not going to end. That's not a question. Unless Americans demand it. I don't see that. I just see it increasing. Here, it's not going to end. So people can hope for that. But if Obama's sitting around on, they call it Kill Tuesdays, and picking who he's going to kill with a drone, and that's allowed in America, we used to call that murder. Innocent kids getting killed. Yeah. So I think there's too much money to be made. It's the idea of materialism. What do we value most, the spiritual needs of freedom or money? And to quote the Bible, that's a good verse, is the love of money is the root of all evil. I agree with that.
Now, has Obama done anything to change this? Did he held up to any of the promises? Well, the fact is he didn't actually make many promises in that regard. He just spoke about change, and then everyone projected what they wanted to see on top of that. But has it been any different?
No, he has not. He actually criticized Bush for his civil liberties policy, and I did too. I vigorously criticized George Bush. No, to be honest with you, the military handout of equipment, I may have said this earlier, to police across the country actually slowed down under George Bush. They've accelerated under Obama.
Right, right.
And that's corporate money, that's control, and the continuing and the increase of a police state. I'm dismayed that Obama won the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's a joke. Oh, I couldn't believe when that happened. Yeah, yeah.
He's over the biggest military empire in the history of the world.
Yeah. Well, the Nobel Committee, as they've done many, many, many times, they've completely discredited themselves, and I don't know why people continue to look at it as some kind of admiration, admirable, you know, institution. But whatever. I guess again,
they got it right when they gave Martin Luther King the Nobel Peace Prize.
Mm-hmm.
After that, he came out against the war. He was anti-war. There's some great people who have won it, but Obama was given the Peace Prize before he had done anything at all in office. That was a mistake.
Yeah, completely illusion-based, yeah.
There was a lot of hope with Obama. And I agree, I had hope for Obama. But that has not occurred. In fact, the police state in this country, the NSA, all that's greatly increased under Barack Obama, unfortunately.
Before we begin to wrap things up here a little bit, let me ask you about, again, what you see maybe potentially politically if America can see a way out. I think Ron Paul spoke favorably about some of your work and some of your books. He, of course, was running last time, but that didn't turn out too well, unfortunately. There's a lot of supporters, though, for Ron Paul, but would he be someone who could turn the tide a little bit? What do you think about Ron Paul?
If he could get elected, but like I say, it's very, very difficult because the corporate entities pick who runs for president. You would have to please those who make the money. And if you do that, my opinion is you sell out. And again, it's pretty clear Obama has done that. George Bush did. And the presidents before him. Go back to the warning that Eisenhower gave us, President Eisenhower. The military-industrial complex will destroy our freedom and eventually bankrupt our country, he thought. That's where we're at. So the only way America will change is the way it changed in 1776. The people got fed up, and they changed it. What I'm afraid of, with the power of the media today to distract people, it's going to be very difficult to get any lasting movement to have any effect. That's unfortunate, but it seems to be true.
All right. Well, as we begin to wrap things up for this time here, I guess I wanted to ask you a little bit more. What's on the radar for you, John? Are you handling any other cases right now? Obviously, it sounds like you're involved in many cases, you know, at one given time, and they seem to go on and on for a long time as well. They drag out and very. Various things is being settled and whatnot, but what's in the plan? Are you writing something new at the moment?
Yeah, well, I continue to write my weekly commentaries. I'm working right now on a possible follow-up book to Government of Wolves. I would like to write a book that would show people how to get very active. I've looked at the great dissenters of history like Gandhi, King, Tolstoy, by the way. People forget Leo Tolstoy was a great activist. And others, and I think we can draw Stephen Biko, others across the world that have been great examples. But most people don't know anything about those people. They know a little bit about them. We're not teaching our educational system, so hopefully we can wake up some people. But unless something cataclysmic happens, I don't see a lot of change. No. And as I tell people, Martin Luther King did not give up. He was undergoing some tough stuff. He was followed. He was badgered. He was threatened with death. He finally got shot. He didn't give up. So what I'm telling people is, keep the flame of freedom burning. Get out there, be active. The NSA may know everything you're doing, and they may use it when they get ready. They can use it against you. Be careful what you say, what you do. Unfortunately, that's the case in America and around the world. I do believe change is possible. Like I said, history is a wheel. Maybe this turn of the wheel, we're going to find ourselves in similar situations as people before us. We may have to wait for the next turn of the wheel.
Well, I hope not, but it seems to be a cycle for sure. It goes around the planet like a like a plague, if you will, that just circling around. And it's funny because in certain regions where there has been immense tourneys previously, it seems to ease in somewhat as it moves on to other territories. The fear there, of course, is that it spreads into a global system eventually. But, you know, in the meantime, we'll just have to keep talking and keep writing. And I want to say thank you again, John, for coming on the program today and talking with us.
Thanks, sir, and keep up your good work.
Definitely. Let me give out the websites here one more time then. agovernmentofwolves.com, rutherford.org, and then you can also find John W. Whitehead on facebook.com. We're going to have that linked up there. And, of course, the book is Government of Wolves.
Government of Wolves is available on amazon.com. That's where they can get it.
Excellent. Amazon.com. We'll have that linked up as well. All right. We'll end things on that note. Thanks again, John.
Hey, thank you, sir, very much.
We have much more coming in the next few days. Randall Carlson, Anthony Peake, Richard Dewhurst, and many, many more. Stay tuned to the websites for the latest developments. My thanks to Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John. And as always, we say a special thanks to all our members, to you, for showing your support and your continued interest in these important subjects. Well, take good care, have a good day, and we'll speak to you in just a few minutes.